We get things rolling like we do every week at this time by welcoming into the show our friend, writer, and critic, Colin Fleming. Colin, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How was your long weekend?
Oh, it was eventful. You know me. I like a brisk pace. And now I am about to go to the movies and sitting, as Dylan said, in the green pastures of Harvard University, so hopefully you can hear me okay.
Absolutely. Well, I want to talk about the piece you have in the American Interest entitled American Crazy, and start with this question. How do we get to this point where the killing of students and shootings in a school become such a minor blip on the radar that they make it about a day and a half in the news cycle?
If that. I think it's because many of us, if not practically all of us, to various degrees, have become so dislocated from reality. And that obviously can manifest itself in hugely horrific ways, like kids shooting kids. And it also manifests itself in the ways that we treat each other, the loneliness we foster in our own lives. But I've been thinking a lot lately about antecedent and consequent. And it's like, you don't necessarily have a familiarity with something that's going to end up being an antecedent. Like, if you have a hammer and you go up to a car and you think you're like some crazy kid and you smash the window and Lawrence Taylor's sleeping in the back and he gets really upset, he comes out, you didn't anticipate Lawrence Taylor being there. That becomes the consequent. And I think we are so kind of locked in right now and almost having like our finger on the trigger, so to speak, of making an antecedent that we don't see what might come in the future. We become dislocated from reality, and we enter into our own private reality, and there's not a system of checks and balances in that.
And is that how, as you said in your piece, evil loses the ability to shock and to even become the status quo?
Sure. It's like if we think of reality, say, as like a granite hallway, okay, and there's a stone shingled roof over it. The echoes of our footfalls are what orientate us in that reality. And what we do to our varying degrees, it's almost like we make little booties out of cloth, right? And we put them over our feet, and it tamps out our echoes so we don't have those bearings anymore. So sometimes people will say, well, kids will shoot kids because they see this historical record. And it's their way to kind of enter their name into it. But I don't think it's even that kind of notion of exact historicism, like you're plotting this kind of coordinate on a graph. I think you're not aware of what consequent is. You're out in your own reality. And it's like, next time you're in the car, like in the passenger seat, not while you're driving, look at all the other people on the highway with you. Like if it's winter, you'll be like, wow, most of these people, or so many of them, don't have seatbelts on. But then you'll just see all of these drivers, and they're looking around, they're looking at their phone, they're doing whatever, because they're probably people who've never crashed before. They feel insulated. They don't understand that when they hit that thing, they're going to be launched at some ridiculous rate of speed through the windshield. And that's how we all are now. We're cocooned within whatever we want to think we are cocooned within. You hear the expression all the time, well, it's my truth. That's not your truth. You don't get to apply the possessive to that. Reality owns the asses of all of us, and to our various degrees, we rarely face that.
Well, what's changed? As you point out, every high school kid, as you say, with a brain and a soul, experiences angst. We've always had troubled kids. We've always had young men trying to find their identity. But 30 years ago, those young men weren't shooting up schools.
True. And you know what? I think sometimes we err in making it about notions of machismo. For instance, if three girls in different states around like the same sort of clustering of time were to have shootings, I think you would see then that it would be more girls in following. Because in this society, with almost everything, we pull from the paradigm. Everyone pulls from the same lexicon. At the end of the day, it is what it is, right? Sorry, not sorry. Everyone sort of parrots the same kind of behavior. So I think really what it comes down to then is not notions of like, oh, I was a star on the football team, or I have this fancy car. I think it comes down to the identity of being comfortable with oneself. Now, you know me well enough by now to know when you ask about the weekend that it's not really surprising. I'm like, oh, there he is. He's talking about some sporting event. He's at some film, and he's at the ballet. He's a guy by himself. He's 42 years old. He's sitting at the ballet, and he's perfectly fine with that. And no one ever thinks, you know what? He's like half a man, that guy. No, they think, wow, that's disarming. And that's a key word, that he is that comfortable with himself. Because when you are that comfortable with yourself, that's where your identity comes from. You don't have a need to prove anything to anyone, least of all yourself. And then you're able to go along and pass through something as difficult as high school, which, let's be honest, seems, while you're in it, for some people, like the absolute lowest circle of hell.
The truth is, though, it is always young men who do this. It's never young women. And I think a part of that is, yeah, that uncertainty with identity. Because as roles have changed over the course of the last, I don't know, generation or two, perhaps, women have opportunities that they didn't have before. And they can excel and often do educationally and professionally. And certainly if you look at performance in school, if you look at admission to college and high-level colleges, women have passed young men. And I see it all the time as a high school teacher. Young men who are adrift, who don't know where to go and who don't have a sense of self and who are still getting the message somehow that emotions are something best left to the women.
I think everyone pretty much feels that emotions are best left for a different species rather than the human race. People are terrified of vulnerability. I don't care if you're male, female, if you're Donald Duck. I think that people have a hard time with it. It's like people talk about the NFL and they say it's a copycat league. Our society is a copycat society, and I certainly hope to God that nothing like this would happen and this trend on the masculine side of things will come to a conclusion. But I don't think it would be hugely shocking if there were women, girls who did something like this and then others got the idea. And yes, it's true. Men can often not know what to do with their angst and how sort of to look for role models, perhaps, or that kind of thing. But you know what? I tend to think that's overstated because I'm of the belief that regardless of what genitalia you possess, you're human. And there's a lot of overlap for everything about gender right now. I think there's a lot of overlap in terms of the fears and the self-loathing and the self-doubt that many of us possess. And, yeah, very much a copycat league. Like the director, Leo McCarey, and he talked about the ineluctability of incidents, meaning basically that everything follows in a sequence, like dominoes. But what ends up really happening right now, I think, is it's not as clear-cut as, like, hard-edged dominoes. It's almost like stacks of, like, rectilinear gauze. And, like, one thing kind of topples into the next thing, but you can't really see it. It's not this clear progression, and everything mushes up. And we're both on Facebook. We see it. We know people who it's like, well, you know what? This is what my life is like. It's awesome. And it's not. And it's always... It's not going to be men any more than it's going to be women, but the fact is we have these tragedies that have taken place thus far, and yes, it has all been men. There's a lot of angst and anger and self-loathing out there on all sides, though, I think. I think it's more of an accretion of what is happening in society that has played out in this one horrific way. But before young men were doing it, no one was doing it.
Right, right.
So there's that progression.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown, and some were quick to point the finger of blame. Ollie North stepped up and said, well, it's violence in society and video games and movies. And frankly, I think a lot of that's just that's just noise, because a well-adjusted person doesn't play a violent video game or see a violent movie and then turn to murder. But I do believe there is something to the isolation that technology has created in our society, that you have far too many people, and you're right, of both genders, who find themselves living in this sort of parallel world of their own creation through social media.
You know what's worse than isolation? Isolation is kind of like Thoreau in the woods, right? Or I guess I do my version of it right now at this particular juncture of my life. Not of choice, that's how it's worked out. I'll get through this particular period. Things will go on in a different way. But isolation in numbers is far worse. And quote-unquote friendships, which are not real friendships, are often based now on, you know what, I'm going to like give you a pat on the back here for what you're doing, and I want you to do the same for me. So we're not holding each other accountable. And that's what social media really is. I'll go on social media, I'll put up something, whatever. It can be fascinating. Three people are going to hit that like button because they know I don't need it. This person is legitimate. For other people, it's a kind of rah-rah cheerleading, so they'll get it back too. And I think when we have isolation in numbers, it's worse to feel lonely in the group when you are fake laughing with all the people in the room who are also fake laughing, because you make the assumption that they're laughing for real, that they're joyous. And you know what? They're probably not that much different from you. So yes, at the extreme end of the spectrum, right, the horrific, newsy, bloody end of the spectrum, we have these shootings. But we also have the rubbish way we treat each other. We have the way we ghost each other now. We have the way we bail on our friendships, the way we look out for others only insofar as we think we're going to get something back. And it becomes a big, boggy, awful soup of societal dysfunction that sometimes has the bang-bang quotient to it.
You also, in the midst of all of this thinking you've clearly been doing about the situation, watched a fascinating movie that I caught on cable a few years ago called Gun Crazy, and it was quite a juxtaposition to watch that movie while thinking about what's going on in society today, because this movie is, what, 65, 66 years old?
It's from 1950, and it's one of the definitive film noirs. That's interesting, too, because film noir, night, right, takes place at night. A lot of this takes place during the day. So it's kind of like the superimposition of the internal, the thing that dogs all of us, becoming manifest in the external, so that night is an internal condition that is carried out around in the daytime of this film. And it involves two people that we basically more like like. And they do some very bad things with guns. And it's really difficult to watch right now. I wonder what a lot of audiences would make of it, because you don't dislike these people, and you should based upon their act. I think it's because to some degree we identify with the actual connection that they have between them. I don't know that many things in life are rarer than a true connection. You know, if I just ask you right now, how many true connections have you had? The answer you're pulling up in your head isn't 28. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
it's
right.
Like two, three, four, whatever. And you hope to have some others. And you're excited when they're prospects. And we see these two people, and you realize kind of like the guns are the big issue. The guns are what get people killed in this film. But they're not like sort of the driver. They're not the engine of this film. It's something else that's lacking in the souls and psyches of these two people, despite their connection with each other.
Check out Colin's latest piece. It's a very good one in the American Interest. Colin, a pleasure as always. We'll check in with you again next week.
Okay, sounds good.
That is Colin Fleming with us here on Downtown. Visit Colin's website as well, and check out all of his great work on there, including his appearances here on Downtown.